Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parent Factors with your host, Dr. John DeGarmo. Today, families are a lot different than they were in the past. So whether you have one child or you're part of a blended family, you can depend on Dr. John for weekly insights, answers, tips, and solutions. Now, the world of parenting is right at your fingertips. Here's Dr. John.
I've got to admit, I've got to be honest with you, I've got to admit to you, I've got to be completely transparent with you. When I was a teacher at the high school level, there were those days, those moments, those times when I had some defiant students in my classroom and I thought, how am I going to handle this? How am I going to handle this child's disruptive behavior? As a foster parent, as an adoptive parent, as a biological parent, I've had those challenges in my home as well. I've had those moments where my children have been disruptive, they have been defiant, and my wife and I have tried a number of ways to address that, probably like you, probably just like you. You probably have had those moments where you just really don't know how to handle a defiant or disruptive child and how to motivate them. Well, our special guest this week on Parent Factors with Dr. John is Dr. Richard Korb. Dr. Richard Korb is a author of the book Motivating Defiant and Disruptive Students to Learn. Wow, sounds like a great title, doesn't it? And he's going to fill us in this week on just how to do that. Dr. Korb, thank you for joining Parent Factors with Dr. John this week. Thank you, Richard, for joining us.
Oh, glad to be here, John.
Yeah, all right. So, you know, as a teacher, I have had those moments, Richard, where I've had those students in my classroom who have been defiant and who have been disruptive and have really challenged the entire learning process. In fact, Richard, I want to go a different tangent right now. I've had some children from foster care come into my home. And children in foster care are generally about a year and a half behind in academics. About 55% of them will quit school at some point in their life, which is tragic. And I have had some kids come to my home who simply do not wish to learn. And they've been very disruptive. They have been very defiant. So I want to ask you, what led you to writing a book about something I'm sure millions of parents deal with every day?
Well, I'll tell you, I started with a counselor when I was teaching junior high school, and I was called into her office, and she said, you know, certain teachers that we have in our faculty are known to be able to do magic, and you're one of those people. And I'd never heard that before. I was flattered, and I thought, so okay. And I thought, well, here comes the hammer. Something's up. She's setting me up. And she said, so we have this student that nobody wants in their class, and we'd like you to take him on. And I knew who this kid was, and I said, well, sure, because he and I always got along well. I was teaching physical education at the time at a 7, 8, 9 junior high school, and I said, yeah. So we got together, I joined up with him, and we started doing things in class together. I made him my honorary TA because I knew that he was not going to cooperate with the other kids, and I had to give him something that was going to be beneficial to him and to me. And so when I was able to do that, we started to warm up, and it comes down to a relationship. That's the bottom line. Everybody's asking, you know, how do I reach this kid? And so that's what led me to writing this book. There were so many things, you know, throughout my career that, you know, I worked with over 4,000 kids in the classrooms. And you just have to build that relationship to start with. And that's what I did with this young man. And he began to bond with me. I began to bond with him. But the key I want everybody to understand is that relationships always start out cold. Even though he knew me and I knew him, it was a cold relationship until something warmth is added to that situation.
Sure, sure. So, Richard, there's going to be a lot of people asking themselves right now, why won't my child talk to me? You mentioned that these relationships sometimes start out cold. So why do some parents struggle with having their children, you know, communicate with them?
Well, I like what Henry Wadsworth Longfellow wrote years ago. He says, if only we understand the secret history of our students, or maybe your own child, we would find in each one of those young people the sorrows and sufferings that they are having enough to disarm all hostility. And so I think that things are happening in our child's life that's outside of our control, whether they go to their friend's house, they're a little person, they're going to a friend's house, or they move along in their teenage years and they're starting to get a job, they're working with other teachers and so forth. We have to start that communication process early on and ask, what's going on first within ourselves. What do we know that could possibly be causing this problem? And if that's not working, we can't really figure it out. That's when we need to start to talk to our child, like I did with this young man, and find out what's your purpose in life? What are you thinking about? Where are you going? What are you thinking? And get them to start to open up. And as we move along, I'll share a formula that opens that up.
So, Richard, how can parents get on the same page with their child? I was interviewed on a TV show last week out of Georgia, and they were asking me how can parents continue to keep a relationship with their teenage children? How can parents stay on that same page with their child?
Okay. That's great, because what we have is a situation where that communication has broken, and we have to create a situation and a scenario that allows them to open up. And so how that begins is it's my formula called 3 + 6 = 1, the desired behavior changing formula. And everybody says, is that Common Core math? What is that? With the 3 + 6 doesn't equal 1. But it does. And here's how it goes. The first three are being firm and fair. And the hardest one is the purpose. What is our purpose? We want our child to speak to us. We want them to share their feelings. And if they have to go back to the developmental process, too, that they get around age, like 10 years old, somewhere in there, they start to differentiate and move away from their parents. They still come back, but they pull away. They're not as dependent upon their parents. And so as they get more of those teenage years, they start to challenge authority. All authority, whether it's the parent, whether it's somebody else, in their world, it's an adult that they don't necessarily appreciate, or maybe they do, but they have to develop that. They're trying to pull away. They're trying to identify themselves as an adult also. They're very frustrated. And so what is our purpose? The purpose should be to create ownership through personal accountability. That's what we're trying to get them to do, whether it's social development, citizenship, academics. They have to be able to understand and identify, what is the purpose of what we're trying to do here. So once you get through that process and those three things are in place, then we move into the six. And the six are listen, don't just hear, but listen to them and then paraphrase back what you think you heard them say.
Right. Now, I imagine this is the age where children believe they know everything, or they're starting to enter into that age where they know everything, and their parents, they're quickly realizing they'll less and less. Is that right?
That's true. Yeah.
So,
what happens though, you hit 50, 60 years old, and you start realizing that you don't know everything, and that's when you become more humble.
Yes. So now you said the first part of the six is to listen. Are there more?
Yeah, there are. There are five others. Set goals. Make sure that this is a mutual. You are sitting down with your student, your child, and you're going to set some goals. The goals can be in any of the realms that we identified earlier. They could be social roles. They could be citizenship, academics. Whatever it happens to be that you're working on is to set those goals. Then accountability, hold them accountable for those goals. I would suggest that when you're talking about accountability, it can be checking in with the school, their church, their friends. Just stay on top of the goals. Don't let them drift and stay with it for a good, sometimes it's going to be like within a day. It could be within an hour. It could be a month. Never want to let the goals go for a month without being accountable. And then celebrate them. Celebrate them publicly or through the media. That's huge. When they feel that, and it could be private accolade as well, like a gift or a snack. And then the last two, review those regularly and then develop solutions, mutual solutions is what that should be. We want to make sure that it's mutual between the parties or you're talking to. And it might not even be your own child. It could be, like you say, a student in school. It might be in your class. It could be I've done this with students that I've ran across out in the public, and I see them doing something that's just like way off track. And I'll just be real firm with them, but I'll be fair. I said, excuse me, did I just see you doing this? And they don't even know who I am. And
right.
They look at you like, who, what? And I say, do you really think that's the right thing to do, the appropriate thing to do? Are you going to get people's respect because of what you're doing? And pretty soon they start to listen. And I say, well, what would be a different way to do that? Can you think of a different way? And then they start to warm up a little bit. But remember, like I said, that relationship right there is cold. They don't know you. But when you start to address it, then things start to open up. So let's just jump to that number one. What's the one? You want that? The bullet? You want that? Here it comes.
Now, I can just hear, Richard, I can just hear those parents who are saying, but every time I talk to my child, every time I ask a child their business, maybe I'm asking about their day at school, or maybe I'm asking about the homework assignment they have, or the phone call they had earlier, or the party they went to. That child is going to say, you're always butting into my business. So what about those parents who have that fight?
Yeah, that fight didn't start right where it's at. It started years ago in the developmental process with that child. And, my wife and I have had three great kids, and they're all adults now. The oldest one doesn't want anything to do with us. The second daughter, she loves it. She's always wanting to talk about the grandkids and this and that. And their son, who's not married yet, I'm his buddy. He wants to do this and do that together, and we have a very close relationship. So that first one is the one that you're talking about. They have somehow decided that they've got a different point of view. They're going to go a different direction, and that has to be honored. If it's not healthy, then they have to understand what the consequences might be. So when that happens, remember, it didn't happen just spontaneously. It took time to get where it is, and it's going to take some time to go back and unravel whatever took place and to move from there. And unfortunately for my wife and I, we do understand, what happened with our oldest daughter, and, all we can do is just work with her through the process, tell her we love her. Mother's Day is coming up. We send things to her. We just try and stay involved in her life as best we can. But don't push into it too much. If they ask you a question, what I like to do is ask them, do you want the short answer or the long answer? Do you really want my answer? Are you just talking to me? Let them be in the driver's seat. And
Let's go further into that, Richard. What about those parents who just have that simple one-word response, yes or no? What can we do for children whose usual response is just, one word, yes or no?
I ask them, can you clarify for me what you mean by that? And then remember the number one in this of the three plus six, of the six, the number one is to listen and to paraphrase back what you think you heard them say. And they might not want to hear it. And they might say, don't paraphrase back. I just told you what I had to say. And you have to give them that space, the same space that you would want if somebody's asking you questions as well. So just keep that in mind. They're trying to find their way, and they will come back. They will come back later on and seek you out for advice if you'll just give them that little bit of room.
Richard, my wife and I we're very, very involved in our children's lives, and we always like to encourage their friends to come over to our house, for swimming in the pool or to go watch movies or whatever it may be, and that we really want to become involved with their friends. We're very open to their friends. But how about those parents out there who don't approve of their children's friends?
Right. That's going to happen, and what you have to do is again, using this formula that I put together here, the purpose, like I said, is the hardest one. The purpose is to understand why has your son or daughter chosen, this person to be a friend. And you have to develop a process, and the process is the one. The six plus six equals one. The one is, when do we discuss our personal concerns? When they're hot and agitated about this friendship, and you think that they think that you don't approve of this friendship, that's not the time to discuss it. You have to find a way to weave that into a discussion at some point and say, you know, just ask them simple questions. What does your friend like to do? What do you guys find in common?
Right.
And slowly begin the process of talking with them about this friend, and let them give you the information. And as you gain the information, you might begin to paraphrase it back and say, is this what I'm hearing you say? I think this is where you're at. And so when that begins to happen, then you can work down through the rest of that process and talk about the goals. I think that you're spending a lot of time with your friend outside of our home. We'd like to get to know your friend. They're obviously having a pretty good influence on you. So how about we make an agreement to have dinner at our house once a week, and your friend comes and has dinner with us? Yeah, and then you just start to kind of work through. If they say, no, I don't want to do that, say, well, how can we get to know your friend? I said, well, you don't need to know my friend. Well, yeah, we do, because now they're part of our family. And even though they're not an immediate part of the family, they are part of who we are. And
sure.
So let's figure it out.
Now, Richard, how about those parents who really struggle trying to find the right time to discuss important issues with their child? And let's say their child comes home late at night and the parents are concerned about something and the child just doesn't give them the time of day. When should parents discuss those ever important issues that are so concerning for that child? Is there a perfect time for that?
Well, I don't know if there's ever a perfect time, because you're never totally sure. We're talking about teenagers here are getting pretty sophisticated in how they do things. So we don't really often know, are they about ready to explode? You got to be kind of sensitive to that, and then slowly begin to discuss with them, your concerns, and not just your concerns, but your praises. Everybody has something good about them. Even the worst of kids, you might think, doesn't have anything good, but there's something, and you have to find that one something that you can begin to build, in that relationship with your child and this friend that's causing you some concerns.
Right, right. Absolutely. Amen. As a former teacher, when I would grade an essay, I always try to find something positive in the essay to start off my grading with, some type of positive comment. Children need to hear positive comments at least once a day. Sadly, so many children come to my home as children from foster care system, and they've never heard anything positive said about them, and that is just so heart-wrenching, so very tragic. Now, where is the best place, Richard, to discuss the necessary business with their child? Is there a right place to do it?
Right. Well, there is, and that's the one. That's the silver bullet. I do this seminar, and I share with people and train teachers and parents all over the place, and, I had a person come up to me asking the very same question. I came here for the silver bullet. I wanted to know how to do this and when and where. You give me all these other steps, but you didn't deliver the silver bullet. So this is what it is. When do we discuss our personal concerns? So that includes the parent. When do you discuss your personal concerns with the child? And when does the child discuss their personal concerns with you? And as you work through this process together and you have mutual agreements, you have to say, okay, when we're in the heat of the moment, that's not the time to discuss our concerns. We have to have a safe haven. Where is that? And you're talking to your child one-on-one. You're in a neutral environment. Nobody's throwing stones at anybody yet. But when the stones start to get thrown, we have to say, okay, where can we meet? Let's have an agreement. And are we going to go down, to the park? Are we going to go out back behind, in the backyard someplace, over by the pool. Where are we going to go? Don't go to your room, parent. Don't bring them into your room. Don't go into their room because that's their territory and your territory. Don't do that. You need to find a mutual place where you can meet up with them and talk about what's going on. And then you can start going back through the process, the 3 plus 6 equals 1. And, Dr. John, this formula I have given to thousands of people, and, I offer it to anybody who wants to email in, and ask for it.
Well, Richard, how can people get a hold of you? How can people find your book, or how can people find more about your formula?
Sure. There's two ways. The easiest way is just go through email, and it's rich@pioneereducationconsulting.com. It's all lowercase. And then the other place is just to go to the website, which is pioneereducationconsulting.com. And then you'll find all this information there. And a lot of people just want that formula because they need to review it, and we've talked about it here for a little bit. But to have it in your hands and looking at it makes a big, big difference in understanding what needs to happen. And
the book is called Motivating Defiant and Disruptive Students to Learn. The author is Dr. Richard Korb. Richard, thank you for joining Parent Factors with Dr. John this week.
Oh, glad to be on, John. Have a good day.
You too, thank you. Again, the book is called Motivating Defiant and Disruptive Students to Learn. Make sure you pick up a copy of that book if you are a parent of any kind. It sounds like a very, very worthwhile book and one chock full of information. Okay, we've got to take a commercial break, but when we come back, we'll be speaking with Irene Clements of the National Foster Parent Association. They have a great conference coming up. You're listening to America's Parenting Show. This is Parent Factors with Dr. John. We'll be back after these messages.
Hey there, this is Barb Royal, founder of KidsCanGive2.com. We make it easy for kids to share half of their birthday money with a charity. You may have heard me on a recent Dr. John show chatting about the importance of teaching kids about giving and philanthropy. I get a lot of feedback from parents about KidsCanGive2.com, and the thing I hear them say the most is they love the opportunity to teach their kids a real-life lesson in giving, a Visa gift card, a charitable donation, and the lesson of a lifetime. Check it out at KidsCanGive2.com, and most importantly, set a reminder so your child can share their birthday with the charity of their choice.
Did you know there are more than 400,000 children in foster care? Foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers stand in the gap for these children, and they need support too. The National Foster Parent Association has been the voice of foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers for more than 40 years, advocating for thousands of families who open their heart and homes to children in need. Learn more about NFPA at www.nfpaonline.org or call 1-800-557-5238.
It is staggering to think that there are more than 450,000 children in the foster care system today. Half of these children will stay in the foster care system and never reunite with their families. Those who remain desperately need to know and feel the love of a parent, the love of God. They need a champion in their corner, somebody willing to intercede, love, and show them faith in action. My brand new book, Faith in Foster Care, How We Impact God's Kingdom, is filled with personal stories and scripture and shows you how you can practically and specifically live out your faith in foster care ministry. This is an encouraging resource for novice or experienced advocates and parents. Specific issues addressed include how to be an effective advocate, how to maintain a healthy marriage as foster parents, how to love the foster child and the biological family, and so much more. Faith in Foster Care, How We Impact God's Kingdom, available at Barnes & Noble, Christian bookstores, and, of course, on my website.
Did you ever wish there was a manual for foster parents? Well, now there is. This manual is a comprehensive guide offering proven, friendly advice for novice and experienced parents alike. Distilling many years' experience into one book, U.S. foster and adoptive parent John DeGarmo combines his own hard-won wisdom with that of fellow foster parents. He describes what to expect from the process, how to access help and support, and how to ensure the best care for your child. The Foster Parenting Manual, available now in stores and at Amazon.com.
And now back to Dr. John and Parent Factors.
And we're back with Parent Factors with Dr. John. I'm your host, Dr. John DeGarmo, and I will be traveling to Las Vegas, about a month and a half from now. to attend the National Foster Parent Association's 2016 annual conference. I'm really excited about it. It's one of my favorite conferences to do every year. And on the phone with us with the National Foster Parent Association is Irene Clements. Irene, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Excellent. Well, so I'm so glad you talked about the conference coming up. And I did want to remind everybody that our conference is being done in partnership this year with the National Kinship Alliance for Children. And we're so excited about our theme of Better Together, Collaborating for Kids. And I think we're going to set a precedent at this next conference about how we can work closer together, more effectively together, to ensure that kids can go either home or to relatives that can provide those loving, safe families that can give them the security that they need for their futures. And we've got such an awesome lineup of plenary sessions and workshops to complement all of those that we're just thrilled that this is going to take off and be an important kind of a milestone and a stepping stone for the quality of care that we do in this country for kids who've been abused, neglected.
Irene, so many listeners probably do not know the term kinship care. They may have heard the term foster care, but what is kinship care? Can you briefly tell us what that is?
Sure. Kinship care is care provided by a child's relative or somebody that's really close to the family and or close to the child, like a school teacher or maybe a 4-H leader. And those are called fictive kin. So what we're looking at is relatives. Lots and lots of grandparents do this very informally across the country and have since the beginning of time probably. And for those grandparents, oftentimes when they need to make those decisions to take in their relative children, then, you know, they're actually keeping kids out of the foster care system. They're preventing the need for the situations in families to get to the point where child protection has to step in. And but there are more formalized types of kinship care now that are based on the identification of the children as being in abusive situations or neglectful situations to the point that they really can't be left with the parents. So relatives are asked to step up to the plate and take those relative children in. The sad part is that so many of the families that do that get very little support, either financial or otherwise, once they've taken those children in. And we feel very strongly that if you're going to take in a child who suffered from trauma and had those experiences, whether you're a foster family or a kinship caregiver family, then you should have the same supports and services available to you and the child or children, regardless of the family setting.
I could be mistaken, and we only have about a minute left, but it sounds like the National Foster Parent Association conference this year in 2016 is one that's not only just for foster parents, but anybody who's an advocate for children. Would that be right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Foster parents, relative caregivers, adoptive parents, and certainly all those staff and volunteers who work with those families. Everybody's invited. We will all have a huge learning curve at this conference as well as a really good time.
So how can our listeners find out more about the conference?
Go to our website at www.nfpaonline.org, and all the information is there.
Oh, fantastic.
Registration information is there as well as a link to the hotel for reservations.
And Irene, would you agree that there's always a need for good foster parents?
Oh, my goodness, yes. We have, across the country, states now have children sleeping in CPS offices or in motels with CPS staff monitoring them because of.
Whether you're a foster parent or somebody interested in becoming a foster parent, I encourage you to check out the National Foster Parent Association's their page, their website. Okay, we have to go. My goodness, the time is already up for this week, Parent Factors with Dr. John. We will be back next week with another episode. I bid you cheers.